All right, welcome back into the Chase McCabe and Big Joe Show live at the Omni Nashville Hotel, downtown Nashville. Chase McCabe off today. He's not off. He's given he got certified LinkedIn cloud storage, and he goes around giving talks to communities and businesses. So he's giving a speech today, but he'll be off next week, and Dr. Crane will be with me next week for all that. Instead, part of my community service from the court, I have to bring Mike Organ on when Chase is out. And, Mike, good morning, buddy.
Good morning. I'd be Chase's talk today if I wasn't here.
So. Yeah, it's great talk. I mean, it's about how to really utilize cloud storage on LinkedIn. Are you on LinkedIn?
No, I think I'm on it, but I'm not active on it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I wouldn't just grab the big Joe and the Go name because a lot of you boneheads like to take that stuff. So I want to take my intellectual property, which is an oxymoron when it comes to me. Right? Mike Organ's in. All right, so we had story time with Mike. This is great. We're not going to delve into third line for the Tennessee Titans or the backup goalie for the Predators. It's story time today. All right, Jake Cutler, great, you know, NFL quarterback, played with the Broncos, Bears, and the Dolphins and everything, lives here and all that, came to Vanderbilt, and he played at Vanderbilt 02 to 05. He was redshirted in 2001. Mike, you covered that team there, Woody Woodenhofer in 2001. Tell me how they almost ruined Jay Cutler's career, and I love this story.
Woody was had come here from the NFL with the Pittsburgh Steelers, had been a part of building the Steel Curtain defense. He came with a NFL mindset and never backed off of that. He kind of had that mindset his whole the whole time he was here.
And he was Rod Dalhauer's defensive coordinator, right?
Yes.
So Dalhauer's here, 95-96, who was awful, gone. They gave the job to Woody, which I don't know why.
Yeah. So Woody's defenses were good on an awful team.
Yes.
So that's how he got the head coaching job. But he had this NFL mindset, and part of that mindset was you play your best 22 players on the football field. Your best 22 players need to be on the field, was what he told me was his mindset. So with that in mind, about 6 or 7 games into the season, I don't remember. They're 2-4 or something like that, 1-5 something. And Woody would volunteer stuff to me all the time. I wouldn't have to ask him. He would tell me things. He would tell me things before he told his assistant coaches, which, of course, I loved. His assistant coaches didn't like that.
Right.
They didn't like reading what he was going to tell them that afternoon in the paper that morning. But he tells me one day, he says, hey, I'm going to start. We knew about Jay Cutler. He was a big-time prospect for Vanderbilt. He wasn't for other schools. He was not heavily recruited.
Right.
For Vanderbilt, he was good. And we could see him on the practice field and see he was a good athlete. 6'3", really good athlete.
Big dude.
So Woody tells me one day, he goes, hey, I'm going to move Cutler to a defensive backfield and start him at safety. And I'm like, okay. And I don't know.
Is this week 7?
It's into the midseason at least of his redshirt season.
Right.
And you know, I'm like, well, you know, you do need your 22 best players on, and he's probably in the top 5. And, yeah, if you can't get him in at quarterback, where
right.
Greg Zolman was a returning starting left-hander, and, you know, and Greg wasn't terrible, so, but they just didn't, Jay wasn't good enough to unseat Greg
right.
at quarterback, so Woody's going to put him at safety. Well, I guess Woody thought I was just going to write things when he told me and, you know, not ask anybody else. But so I go to Steve Crosby, who is the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach. No, Jeff Rutledge was quarterback's coach from Alabama, but he's the offensive coordinator.
Right.
And I tell Steve, and he grows crazy. Steve by far was the most verbal, animated coach on the staff. And he lets out a string of obscenities like you wouldn't believe. I remember I told him in the cafeteria where Magic Nuried was the
guy right.
would fix this. I tell him in there, because I go straight from where Woody was to tell him in that. And he just goes crazy. Now, fortunately, he has the sense to cool down before he goes to talk to Woody. He goes to Woody on his knees, and he says, please, no, don't do this. And Woody, we need the best players out on the field. He goes, I know that, but do not take my quarterback away.
Right.
And the thing about Woody was he would make decisions, and then he would back off of them after he would, you know, somebody would go to him, and he backed off of that decision. I don't know if it was ever even brought up to Jay Cutler. I think you brought it up to Jay Cutler.
And he verified it.
Okay, so he did. So
he was at he had a juvenile diabetes camp at Pope John Paul.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, is this – Mike Organ tells me this. It's true. He's like, yeah, it was true. They came to me, and I was like, whatever helps the team. Jay was very open. He's like, whatever helps the team.
Yeah.
I prefer to stay at quarterback, but if you need me, I'll help the team out. And he's like, had it been preseason, yes. But I could have sworn he said it was week 7.
It was. I think they were like 1-6 or something. That's why Woody wanted to do it.
Right.
Because he's like, you know, we're losing all these games, and we've got a player over here that could help us win the last 2 or 3 or, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and you're right about this, had he gone out there, he would have been a success. He would have done well at safety. And there would have been no reason to ever move him back to quarterback.
Zero. And, you know, who's the last Vanderbilt quarterback drafted in the first round? I mean, Bill Wade, 1950-something, and then Jay Cutler, right,
Cutler,
doing
exactly.
All that. Yeah. So that just showed – and then Woody was fired after the 0-1 season, and then Bobby Johnson came in with all that. So during that time, which, you know, and I'm sure – you know, and then Jay goes on and makes – which is fine because he had a hell of arms, a hell of a quarterback. Was that the 0-1 season – well, we've talked about this before, but we'll talk about it again – the fake punt versus Georgia?
Yes.
Was that 0-1?
I believe it was, yeah.
Was it here in town?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it was here. They were beating Georgia at halftime. They had manhandled Georgia in the first half.
Right.
Toward the end of the first half, things had started to sway, as they all so often did. And the game was going back to where it was supposed to be in the universe, in Georgia's control.
Right.
So at halftime – Woody makes a decision. We got to do something. We got to, you know, we got to find something in the second half. And by the way, Clark Lee was on these teams. That's another thing that's
God
interesting.
God bless Clark Lee.
We're talking about a coach. We're talking about a quarterback, and Clark Lee's on the sideline watching all this happen. The current Vanderbilt coach. So, the second half starts. Vanderbilt's up by a couple of touchdowns. Vanderbilt gets the ball, takes a kickoff, and gets up to about the 24-yard line. Goes nowhere in 3 downs, and Woody calls a fake punt. Justin Perkey, great guy from Good Pasture, runs a quarterback option going – or a punt option, I get punter option,
yep.
Going left, never gets to pitch it because he gets swarmed at Georgia's. How Georgia saw it. Why would you ever be looking for a fake punt
right.
on a 23-yard line? But Georgia saw yes. it coming. They tackle Perkey, as I recall. He doesn't even get to make the pitch, and it goes Georgia's way. They score. They end up taking over control. In the postseason – I mean, in the post game, everybody's ready to jump on Woody. What a stupid decision. Why would you do this? Everybody, that's the setting for any for your listeners. Before the coach comes out, all the media that knows better than the coach always.
Yeah, always.
I can't wait to ask him.
Right?
I was the only guy in the room that agreed with the call. Not the call so much as the – I understood, okay? I empathized with what Woody was going through because I had that same sinking feeling toward the end of the first half that he had because I had seen so much Vanderbilt football. He hadn't seen as much as I had seen, but he had already gotten the same sinking feeling. And I agreed you needed to do something. Now, fake punt at the 23 against a Georgia football team, maybe that's not what you do, but I had the same feeling that he had. So I understood, and I was not hard on him at all.
So if that play works, what happens?
They might regain momentum. They had lost momentum completely. But if you shame Georgia like that again after they had taken control, maybe – if you get the 6 yards or whatever it was, they needed, you know, you shut them down, and then they're like, oh, my gosh, we're back to where we were at the start of the game.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I mean, do they go on to win? I don't know. But they got a better shot at winning than another bad thing. The snowball continues to roll down the hill, and now they've got the ball, you know, in your red zone
yep.
to start the second half.
You covered Vanderbilt football how long?
10 years.
Is that the most gut-wrenching, heartbreaking loss? There's got to be more, right? Because –
LSU was probably worse. LSU was worse. LSU was Jerry DiNardo, who had run out on Vanderbilt, literally.
Yep, you're right.
Ran out on Vanderbilt to go to LSU.
Regrets it.
And they've got LSU on the ropes, and they're going to go.
Is that here or down there?
Here.
Okay.
And they're going to go for 2, and Vanderbilt is, and they can't get lined up. So they get a penalty.
I don't know why it's funny. It
so is. Then they can't get lined up again, so they get another penalty. Delay penalty. So now you're, 10 yards back. So now you're going to kick the extra point and tie instead of take the lead. And they can't get lined up. So they get moved back again. And they got a good kicker. I think John Markham was a kicker. They keep getting moved back. And then by the time they finally kick the extra point, it's not good. They end up losing. That was the most gut-wrenching to lose to LSU. South Carolina was tough because Woody told me they quit on him. And you never hear a coach say that. Maybe Steve Spurrier. I heard you and Chase talking about that. Was it yesterday?
Spurrier's a quitter.
Yeah. But, you know, you always ask a coach, did they quit on? No, they fought to the very end. We lost 70-0, but I'm proud of the way they fought to the end, which is not true.
Yeah.
But Woody told me after this game, he said, they quit on me tonight. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, they quit on me. And I quoted him. And, of course, they all got mad at me the next Monday at practice for writing that they quit, that the players quit on him. I'm like, your coach said it. I didn't say it. And, Woody got tired of hearing that that cock-a-doodle-doo that they do in South Carolina after every touchdown was driving him crazy. That rooster crow.
Yes.
That they do.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. What about the 87 Tennessee Van? I know you weren't covering there, but Vanderbilt goes up in 87 in Knoxville, and it's the first half. It's beating the snot out of Tennessee. I mean, it was – Tennessee almost quit at halftime. It was that bad.
Is this the one where Chris Gaines made so many tackles? I'm up there for Friday night quarterfinals.
Yeah, of high school football.
High school football covering Jefferson County when they had Todd and his brother.
Collins?
Todd Collins and Brent Collins.
Todd and Brent Collins.
Brent's
right.
Gone by now, but Todd's the stud. Todd's Mr. Football or the MVP. We didn't have Mr. Football
right
back then.
He's great.
So
player.
Anyway, I'm covering Jefferson County, and they're playing Tullahoma, I believe. And they beat Tullahoma. So I'm there in Jefferson County, which is close to Knoxville. You got to go back to Knoxville. So my boss says, Jimmy Davies says, swing by Dallas Stadium, cover the Vanderbilt-Tennessee game, help Woody and Clymer out, Larry Woody and David Clymer out. I throw all these names around like
yeah,
the listeners.
Yeah, well, you know them. I would, too, if I was in a position.
So I get there, and they say, hey, you know Chris Gaines, right? Yeah, you know, grew up with him. And they say, well, Woody says, why don't you focus on Chris, see if he has a good game.
Okay, yeah, right.
And do a story one way or the other. If he has a bad game, say, you know, big game.
Because it was his last game.
It was his last game. His brother had played at Tennessee, and he was one of the best defensive players in the country, went on to be an All-American. So he said, you know, do a story on Chris Gaines one way or the other, if he has a good game or bad game. We had a pretty good game. So
had a great game.
He had one of the best games that any defensive player's ever had in the SEC.
Yep.
And
Majors even said that.
I got a great picture after the game of Johnny Majors holding Chris by the arm, whispering in his ear. And I gave it to Chris on his 50th birthday. I framed it and gave it to Chris on his 50th birthday, which was about 5 or 6 years ago. But, yeah, Johnny Majors told him, he said, we wouldn't have beat him if they all played like you.
Yeah, basically. Right. I think, was Vanderbilt up like 31-7? I mean, so I don't know if that's
exact. 28-7 or 31-7, something like that.
But in control.
Yes, and into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter. Yeah,
then Tennessee started feeding Reggie Cobb.
Yep.
It's like Reggie Cobb here, Reggie Cobb, because they couldn't throw the ball. But Billy Cunningham had Overton Starr had an interception back for a touchdown. But they couldn't stop Reggie Cobb.
Yeah.
He was getting 5, 7, 8 yards a carry. And so that was the game plan in the second half. And they come back and win. And it was like, I mean, and Vandy had not won in Knoxville in forever.
Yeah, forever. And yeah. So it was going to be a huge game. It should have been a great game for Chris to end his career on. But anyway, I get to do the story on Chris, who had a good game in that game, and they lost, which even built into the drama part of it. You know, he played so well, and they still lost.
Yeah, I mean, so, poor Watson.
Oh.
2 years later in 89, they're driving, and Brad Gaines lets a ball go through his hands, and then Tennessee wins 17-10. I mean, just that's Vanderbilt. So when people ask about how big was that Alabama win last year, I'm like, because you know what? We all love Vandy here in Nashville that grew up here. We're not the biggest fans, but we want to see him do well.
Yeah.
And I tell people, them beating Alabama was like they exorcised all that bad stuff.
Yeah.
For decades.
Yes.
Because they beat the number one team in the country.
No doubt about it. Sometimes when people write this was the biggest win in Vanderbilt history, you know, you got some guys that come out of the 30s or 40s. No, hold on just a second.
We beat Sewanee in 32.
Exactly. This was when the people wrote last year that was Vanderbilt's biggest win of all time, there was no question.
Yeah,
none. That's the one definitive claim that could be made. We were taught early on in journalism school when I went to work at the Tennessee, it was like, never say the, just say one of the.
Yeah.
And it would have been easy, right, last year. This is among Vanderbilt's biggest wins ever. No, you could say this was Vanderbilt's biggest win ever, bigger than any bowl win. They had a Peach Bowl win in 58, I think, that was over Auburn, I think.
58.
That was huge. That was right. Big back then. But, no, this was definitively the biggest win because of the games we're talking about. You're talking about Watson. I went down to cover MTSU in Chattanooga for a night game one year, and is at Chattanooga, and a buddy of mine told me to swing by and catch Swanee's homecoming because it was an experience.
Yeah.
So I get on top of the mountain, and I go to Swanee's homecoming. Guys wearing kilts, dogs running out on the field because
right.
There's no fence around the field. So I'm pulling in to Swanee, and from the time I got off the interstate till I get in the Swanee parking lot, it's 21 to nothing. The game had not started by the time I got off the interstate. Anybody knows how far Swanee is from the interstate. It's not far.
Right.
By the time I'm pulling in looking for a parking place, and I don't have to look long because there's not many cars there, it's 21 to nothing and with Alabama leading. And that's what we grew up with right there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll come back. That's a great story. We talk about Mount Rushmore all the time, but we never talk about Mount Rushmore of Nashville. And there's one guy that I want to ask your opinion on that needs to be on there that we never talk about, but he needs to be on there. All right, Mike Organ's with us. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel on this beautiful day in downtown Nashville. This is the Chase and Big Joe Show right here on 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back here to the Chase McCabe and Big Joe Show live at the Omni Nashville Hotel downtown, where tomorrow night the fireworks are happening. I'm told somewhere between 300,000 and 11 million people will be downtown Nashville. Are Mike, you coming downtown tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm not leaving. I said I'm going to go hang out in the lobby and
just take it all in.
I got a good parking place, valet. How much is it going to run me?
Oh, gosh, probably $600 at least they do that. They take Venmo, if you don't mind getting that out there already. But you know what's crazy about tomorrow night is it almost happened years ago, but people park on the interstate.
Oh, yeah.
And to watch the fireworks, I mean, and it's a hazard. And now, thank God, our police force moving those people off because it's bad.
Well, where I live, they park at Summit Hospital in the parking lot. Fortunately, in the back where they're not in the way of any ambulances, hopefully,
right?
Emergency arrivals. But yeah, people look all. They spend the whole day looking for somewhere to.
Right.
I'm just like just. Drive downtown, just cruise downtown about 30 minutes before it starts.
Right, and you get there
find
and get done.
Find you a parking place down on 1st or 2nd, and,
I was such a petty, you know what, like 20 years ago. So fireworks are illegal in Davidson County. Illegal. You cannot shoot them off. You cannot buy them. They are illegal in Davidson County.
Yes.
So I asked, it was Purcell in 2000, the mayor had an event, and I said, hey, I'm curious, do they have a permit to light off fireworks by the stadium?
Good question.
He's like, well, and I was kidding because it was after the press conference. He's like, I said, no, I checked. They don't. And he got, I mean, he was ecstatic. Bonna De La Cruz, was she a Tennessean writer? At one
yes,
of
she was. Yeah.
I think she was. And so, you know, and I saw where this was. I was like, no, I'm kidding. And I thought there would be, but I was curious.
It's a good question.
If they don't, I'd go arrest them.
Yeah, yeah.
Channel 4 ran a promo before I started working over there of Rudy shooting off fireworks. It was like, we're your hometown news. And I'm like, I wonder if Rudy got a permit.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you imagine arresting Rudy Kalis?
Well, knowing Rudy, he probably did get a
permit. He probably did. Rudy's the one guy that went and got the permit for all that.
We issued one permit this year.
Yeah, to Rudy.
To Mr. Rudy Kalis. Hey, I got a question. How do these I was in Mount Juliet where it's legal
right.
to shoot yeah. fireworks. I was there the other day. Actually, I was in Smart and Laverne. That's where I was.
Damn, and, man, you're all over the town.
I know. I just get around.
Right.
And
she said.
One of those tents, those humongous tents, yeah. was open, and it's 70% off for all fireworks. How do you open and you're already 70% off what?
Did they mark it up again to come back down?
But they just opened. I mean, and they opened up 70% because this was like Monday.
Wow.
So they were just opening, and they're opening 70% off.
You know, a lot of those firework tents are like coaches run those places.
Oh, I know.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
And they get good money for their program.
Those guys will do anything through the summer. You remember they used to run the Wave Pool, Wave Country. And
heck yeah, they did.
Work at Hermitage Landing, now known as Nashville Shores.
Yep. Did you go to one for the sun back in the day? Of course you did.
I did. Saw Eddie Money there, as a matter of fact.
Eddie Money saw his wife there, too.
As a matter he of did, fact. And married her. And then I saw Phil Vassar.
Who opened for Phil Vassar?
Keith Urban.
Keith Urban did.
And then afterward, Phil Vassar introduced me to Keith Urban, and I said, "You're pretty good."
Right.
And he goes, "Oh, well, thank you very much." And I said, "Whatever, I can't do anything." And I said, "Man," I said, "you guys ought to play together some more." I said, "I think you're gonna have a decent career."
I think it was 95. I think that's when that happened. Because I always remember Keith Urban's name was not capitalized. It was all lowercase.
Because
he was trying to be different.
Oh.
Keith Urban. You know, it's like, so it was lowercase. The K and the U wasn't capitalized.
I saw him at Brown's Diner a couple of months ago. I was eating with Larry Woody and Terrell Davis. And he was over across the restaurant from us. And Woody looked over and goes, "Is that Keith Urban?" And by himself, he had a white T-shirt on. I Googled him up, and you can see his arm tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I looked at the tattoo, because he's facing away from me.
Right.
I said, "Yep, that's Keith Urban." He goes, "How do you know?" I showed him the picture. So then he got up to leave. He was very nice. He came over and he was putting his sunglasses on and he took them off. He looked at us and goes, "Hey, guys." And I told him the story I said, "Yeah, actually, we know each other, Keith." I'm a little disappointed. I'm doing my hair different than I was doing it back then. But
right.
We know each other. I said, "I met you with Phil Vassar once and told you we were going to have a good career." So
a good ending of that story would have been Urban saying, "Don't ever talk to me again."
I think that's what he said.
I'm not ever. Sure. Don't say a word. And then he said, "That's not a knife. This is a knife." Like Crocodile Dundee. All right, we'll take another break because I'm getting yelled at by our producer, Dr. Crane, which is a good thing because evidently there must be a beauty pageant in downtown Nashville because this is insanity. So it's good we're taking a break. We'll come back with the final segment. What day is it and celebrity birthdays next right here on 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show here on 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe on vacation. Mike Organ in studio. If I can get Mike from Stop Looking Outside at the sidewalk. We're live at the Albany National Hotel. Good Lord. Sorry about that. It's downtown's beautiful, right?
Yes, it's beautiful.
They're expecting, Mike, 11 million people.
I know. And that
for
was
the fireworks.
I think when the show started, it was only 8 million.
It's grown exponentially. How does that word say?
Big time.
There we go. Mike Organ here. Story time with Local Mike. All right. So, you know, we spent a lot of time in the summer about Mount Rushmore this, Mount Rushmore that. But, you know, you talk about – we always like Tennessee or Vanderbilt or you know, the Vols, the Titans, blah, blah. But the city of Nashville, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great topic. You debate this. It's a great summer topic. But, obviously, Wilma Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
I know she's from Clarksville, but she did all that at TSU, which is now – Wilma Rudolph's on there. Larry Schmitto should be on the Mount Rushmore because he brought pro sports here.
Yeah, he brought he had his success at Vanderbilt. He won an SEC championship. After that SEC championship, he went straight to bringing minor league baseball back to Nashville. He'd been here in the 60s under the Nashville Vols. Well, now, of all places, Vanderbilt is going to bring – a Vanderbilt coach is going to bring minor league baseball back, and he does. And he brings the Nashville Sounds back. And after a rocky beginning, and I mean before they started playing, because they were bringing in seats from the Braves' old stadium – on game day and putting them in. And he gets them in, and the Sounds were a huge hit for many years.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's what, 77, 78 when they started, all through the 80s. I mean, it was big time. But there's a guy on there, and you brought him up earlier during a break, his daughter up during the break. But all too often we forget about the past, which drives me crazy. But how do we undervalue Bill Wade?
I don't know, because growing up, you and I are similar age. Bill Wade was the Vanderbilt icon. He was the Vanderbilt guy.
Good looking, smart. Good
on the cover of Look magazine.
Yeah, right?
Which was a big time magazine. People back, that was as big as Time magazine. And he was on the cover with a couple of Vanderbilt cheerleaders, I believe. Just a huge star. He couldn't get any bigger. And it was before the Super Bowl, so he went to the NFL championship. Was a big star in the NFL.
Number one draft choice, right?
1-1. Number one first round pick.
By the Rams.
By the Rams. And I think he played about three or four seasons with the Rams, then went to Chicago and had great success with the Bears.
George Halas loved him.
Yes.
I mean, big time.
And the Bears were it back then. Yep. You know, they were a huge franchise. And then he comes back here and he's big. And, you know, up at the time when I was covered Vanderbilt from 91 to 2001, Bill would still show up at the in the athletic department a couple of days a week and hang around and He was kind of the Eddie George of his day. He was a big fixture in Nashville, which Eddie transitioned his playing career to remain in the spotlight to this very day. And, God, Joe, we ran a gallery the other day from 2005, and it's a picture of Eddie George playing in Jeff Fisher's softball. Yeah, and the caption says, former NFL player Eddie George. So think about that. 2005, Eddie George was a former NFL player.
He was.
20 years ago, he was a former player. So anyway, but Bill kind of did the same things. He maintained a high profile and was in the inaugural Vanderbilt Hall of Fame, Athletic Hall of Fame class.
Yeah.
And was just a high profile individual in this town until his death.
Yeah, we've never had a number one draft choice out of number one overall in football in the NFL out of Nashville, and he was. He played at NBA, just a legend. And so I've had people like looking and like, oh, yeah, oh, my gosh, this guy. I mean, before the really before TVs were in your house.
Yes. Oh,
this
yeah.
guy, I think 51, 52, 53, right in there. When Bill Belichick, before Bill Wade passed, when the Patriots came here in 19, I asked Belichick. I've got the soundbite somewhere, but I'm too lazy to find it. And I said, hey, well, you came to town. You spend time with Bill Wade. And Bill Belichick talked for a minute and 19 seconds.
Is that right?
On Bill Wade. Great single-wing quarterback. My father coached him.
Steve coached with him. And Bill was born here in Nashville.
Born here in Nashville.
When Steve was on that staff.
That's right. And so he's like, he was an icon. Loved talking to him. He ran the Bears single-wing. And Belichick, I don't think Belichick was going to shut up talking about him. But it shows you
that sentence has never been said.
Right.
Bill Belichick.
So that's why, I mean, you know, people bang on Belichick all the time. But, I mean, the fact that he just embraces history like that from these guys who are legends is amazing.
Well, you remember Belichick ran the country music half marathon.
Yep.
And what year would that have been? You know better
2014.
Than okay, 2014. Well, after he ran it, he was dating a young lady or a lady from
Franklin.
From Franklin. Mm-hmm. But after it was over, we asked him, said, why are you in Nashville? I think a lot of people just assumed he was here for her. He said, no, I'm here because Bill Wade's in a
yes.
assisted living home, and I came in to visit him. And he had spent a couple of hours with Bill that day, the day before, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it was – it's funny. I was telling Jeff Fisher this past weekend. There's a Bill Belichick. This guy spent a year with the Patriots in 2002, wrote a book called Patriot Reign. Great Boston Globe writer. And he wrote afterwards, when the Patriots came here in 2002, played Monday Night Football, Titans beat the snot out of him. Manhandled him, pushed him around, everything. And Belichick said, that was the most physical beatdown I've ever had as a coach.
Wow.
And that was never going to happen again. So talk about Belichick flew into town. His aunt lived in Cookeville. He went to see her. She died like a couple weeks after he visited her. And he came back. He's like, it was just a terrible weekend. And my aunt was sick. And then the Titans, Jeff Fisher's football team, shoved us around the football field the entire game. I think the game's only 24-10. He goes, we were never in that game because I vowed then we would never be out-physicaled or out-manhandled by a team. I was like, oh, there's a lot of national connections with Bill Belichick here.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he almost married the woman from front. They had a house in Leaper's Fork.
I know that.
Yeah.
Yep. Who's he dating now?
I don't know. I've not seen anything.
I'm not sure who he's dating now.
Has he got a new girlfriend?
I think he's single.
Oh.
No. I mean, and I was like, thank you, Bill Belichick, for May, the month of May, because in the sports world, it's not really a lot happening. And he got us through the month of May because we were doing the Belichick watch with all that.
You know what? My thoughts of Bill Belichick, when I think of Bill Belichick, this was before. This is why it's still hard for me to comprehend the success he had, because when Rod Dalhauer was hired to come to Vanderbilt, which you mentioned a while ago, and this is the first time in the last 10 years that Rod Dalhauer has been name has been mentioned twice on a radio show on the same day.
Oh, no.
That's never happened before.
No, never happened before.
So, but when he was hired
can we shut the blinds, please? Good Lord.
Probably not. Hired, the Tennessean sent me up to spend a week with Dalhauer. He stayed with the Browns because they were in the playoffs even after he got hired.
Oh, okay. And Belichick was the coach.
And the Browns gave me great access. They let me sit in on a team meeting. They let me sit in on his press conferences. And they wanted me to see how he interacted with I wanted to see how he interacted with Rod Dauhauer.
Wow.
And so they let me sit in a team meeting. I mean, they know I'm not going to report anything that's going to give away. I think they were playing the Steelers.
Belichick allowed you in a team meeting?
Yeah. I know I was in there.
Yeah, man.
And but again, he was not a big name. He was just he was one of those retread NFL coaches.
Yeah.
That was probably going to be here in a couple of years and then go to another place, which is what he did. But – yeah, and he was not a huge name back then. And
well, he had been D.C. for the Giants and won a defensive coordinator, won some Super Bowls, but he'd been in the Browns a few years.
Yeah,
and wasn't really
yeah.
sitting there.
I mean,
fire.
I was far more interested in the locker room where I had Vinny Testaverde and the former Redskins quarterback, Mark Rippon.
Mark Rippon, okay.
Mark Rippon were the two quarterbacks.
Wow.
Mike Caldwell was the
linebacker.
No, defensive end.
Maybe
linebacker. Right?
From MTSU.
Yeah, because I think he played defensive end at MTSU. And, you know, Mike's now a defensive coordinator, right? Wanted to talk to him and just, you know, like I went through the locker and they were all saying the praises of Dauhauer. They loved Dauhauer and Belichick did too.
Maybe you should have known then.
Yeah.
Everybody universally loved and all that.
Yeah.
That would have been Saban's last year because he went and coached, I think, Toledo in 95 or – Akron or one of those schools,
yeah.
And then he went to Michigan State after that. Belichick, you know, he traded Bernie Kosar before the season in 93. Bernie wins a Super Bowl with the Cowboys, and then Belichick was after that.
And never had another good quarterback either. I mean, he's
his
cursed.
Entire career, never had a good quarterback.
Will his career be tarnished, or will he survive what happened, the way things unfolded with Brady going and winning another Super Bowl?
I think he's fine. We all know he cheated. The fact that they had a scouting three or four guys shooting video in the Jets press box before a game because they told the Jets person they were doing a documentary and they lied to them up there. I mean, it's just
but will he survive the fact that it was all Brady?
I think so. I do too. But it was
all Brady.
All right, we'll take another break. Mike Organ in with us today for Chase McCabe, who's out today and all next week. You're listening to the Chase McCabe Big Joe Show right here from the Omni National Hotel, 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show live this morning at the Omni National Hotel in downtown Nashville. We're ready for the big 4th of July event happening tomorrow night. I'm told there's going to be a little over 8 million people downtown tomorrow night to take all this in. Should be a lot of fun. Mike Organ with us. By the way, I'm getting all these messages, Mike, that Nick Saban is hanging out at the Predators prospect camp over at the Ford Ice Center in Bellevue. Why would Nick Saban be over there?
I don't know, but he has some interest in the Predators. I can remember, and I think it was during the title run when they were in the championship, that he showed up in a sweater. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
It was
now.
When he was building the Mercedes-Benz.
That's correct.
Place
by the airport.
Yeah, with his partner. He went on social media with Miss Terry, and he had a sweater on that hung down to like his knees.
Was he wearing pants?
Remains a question. I think he has some interest in the Predators. I know that was all gimmicky and, you know, to try to draw attention to his dealership because he needed money at the time.
But
and,
somebody captured a picture of him at Preds prospect camp at Fort Ice in Bellevue.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Maybe him and the Haslams are buddies?
Yeah, might be, yeah.
Just showing up, maybe.
You know anybody that follows the Predators?
I think Derek Mason does. We'll have Derek Mason DVD on from 11 to 2. I think Derek Mason does. By the way, Derek Mason – they're not in today, okay. Thanks, Dr. Crane. By the way, Derek Mason played for Nick Saban at Michigan State. Did you know that?
He sure did. Yeah, I did know that.
Yep. You okay right there?
Yeah, I'm trying to get
you're getting attacked by your glasses?
Yeah, my glasses.
All right, we'll
my
get more Saban. All right, so one of the best stories, it's story time with Uncle Mike. Mike Organ, Tennessee, and in today. Is in 2009, Kyle Busch won the – what was that race called? It's the Xfinity race, Busch race.
Yeah, it was – what the Xfinity. I think it was the Grand National at the time. It may have been Busch, but Grand National.
But it wasn't the NASCAR.
No, it was just the middle level, the second, the one level below the Cup.
So Kyle Busch wins the event. We all remember the video. He gets the guitar and smashes the guitar. I was standing next to Joe Williams. I thought Joe Williams was going to murder Kyle Busch.
We got a great picture of Joe Williams. And,
right?
Fortunately, you're cropped out of it. But front page, Joe Williams and Kyle Busch. And Kyle destroying a Sam Bass custom guitar.
So nice.
With
Sam Bass
sitting right there.
Right.
Yeah.
So about 2 months later, Kyle Busch is in town at the Fairground Speedway.
Yep.
And there's another event going out there. And then I'll set it up and you take it over. The Speedway PR lady comes out. There's all the media's there. It's the first time Kyle Busch has spoken. And this thing took over. And Tammy comes out and says, hey, please don't ask. Kyle doesn't want to talk about it. Please don't ask about the guitar incident. Let it go. It's a non-topic. We'll stop the press conference. And everybody there was like, okay, sure, no problem. You know, we're like, we bowed our heads. Like, yeah, absolutely, whatever you're going on. All right, so Kyle comes out. Mike, take it over from there.
Well, it was kind of silly because, okay, so Kyle had been advised, obviously, this wasn't Kyle's idea. He was here for the All-American 400 in November, which is run every year out at the fairgrounds. And his team had told him, you know, it might be a good time. You're going to be in Nashville. It'll be a good opportunity for you to make good on destroying the guitar in front of the creator right there. So why don't you do something? So he said, what do you want me to do? And they said, well, make some kind of donation. Well, he donated several thousand dollars to Belmont's music school for them to put in computers in their classrooms. And, yeah, it was into the tens of thousands of dollars, $40,000, $60,000, maybe $100,000. So Mike Kerb accompanies him at the in the press box at Fairground Speedway. Mike Kerb of Kerb Records, of Kerb Event Center, you've all heard. And Mike's obviously big in music. So Mike shows up. So you're right. Tammy Brewington comes out and says, okay, she doesn't say this, but there's a situation. Kyle is here to talk about making up for smashing his guitar by giving money to Belmont's Music Center, but you can't ask about the guitar.
Very emphatically, you cannot ask.
You cannot ask. It's a non-topic, even though it's the only reason he's here today is because he's giving money to the music school. So he comes out, and he's got his jumpsuit on. He's got his race suit on, and he's standing there with Mike me and Joe and the rest of the media are here in town, and Larry Woody, who had Hall of Fame auto racing rider for the Tennessean, covered racing since they used to run moonshine over in the hills. He covered Richard Petty, who had his 88th birthday yesterday. So everybody agrees, we're not going to ask that question. So Mike steps up and gives the exact amount and what they're going to use it for and what it'll mean for the music school. And they say, okay, let's open it up to questions. I think Kyle probably made a comment or something, an opening comment. And he said, now let's open it up for questions. First question, Larry Woody got his hand up. Tammy calls on Larry. Larry says, in retrospect, Kyle, do you wish you hadn't smashed the guitar at Nashville Super Speedway? So Tammy jumps up, and Tammy's just the messenger. Tammy jumps up and says, waves her hands. No, that's off the record. That's off the we can't talk about that. That's not, that's out of bounds. And Woody says, so she steps aside. Woody goes, what about it, Kyle? Would you have?
Right.
So
we're all laughing at this point.
Oh, gosh.
It's turning into chaos.
Joe's on one knee.
Right. I'm holding like eight microphones.
He's volunteered to hold everybody's TV mics. He's on one knee, and I'm standing above him, and I take a picture of Joe, who looks up at me like, what is going on? I thought this was going to be like a boring,
a
check donation kind of thing.
Yep.
And I got a great picture of Joe that I'll share on social media sometime. So Mike Kerb steps up and he goes, okay, can we just stick to the donation and what a wonderful gesture this is on Kyle's behalf? And Woody says to Mike Kerb, who hasn't been spoken to like this in probably ever, he says, why don't you let Kyle talk? Why don't you let Kyle say that, Mike? Speak for himself. And Mike starts to say something back to Woody, and Kyle steps up and says, I'll talk about it. And Woody's known Kyle Busch since he was 8 years old, running around with his older brother, you know, who was also a NASCAR driver, Kurt Busch. So Woody'd known him since he was a kid, and he knew all you had to do was push his buttons,
right,
and he'd talk about it. And he did. He stepped up, he stepped in front of Mike Kerb, and he said, I'll talk about it. No, I don't regret it. It was a spur of the moment, and I've talked to Sam Bass since then, and he didn't have any problem with it, and I'm just doing this because I love music or whatever he said.
And so that's going on. We're all laughing. Other people asking questions. Tammy's trying to shut everybody up. It got so big that during all the, right after that, ESPN texts me and says, hey, we want that video. And so it made ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
It was a big deal, and it just took off, and it was bizarre. And so I tell when I talk to journalism students, I bring up Larry Woody.
And Woody,
don't let PR people tell you what you can't do.
Absolutely not. This is America.
Right.
And Larry Woody was retired at the time, by the way. I had replaced Larry Woody as the NASCAR driver, rider.
Yeah.
That's why I'm there, is to cover. Woody's doing this for some magazine. I can't even remember the name of it. He's freelancing.
Right.
He's just there to, you know, grab a couple of quotes, go back home, write a story, make a couple of $100.
Yes.
But the newspaper man in him wouldn't let him do that, so he did that. So you mentioned there were some other people standing up. There's
yeah.
Mike, there's Tammy, there's Kyle. There's another guy, younger guy up there, 20, 22 years old. Well, after it all calms down, relatively, the young man comes up to Woody and says, I want to talk to you outside. Well, Larry Woody is a Vietnam vet.
Okay? Right.
He was there, you know, and Woody's pretty tough. He's from the South. He's a hunter and fisherman. You know, he goes to Canada every year on a trip. Takes 13 hours to get there, where he drives straight to it, stops for pee breaks, and that's it. And then he takes a hop out on an island. That's the only way you can get out there on a small plane. And then he hunts and fishes for a week or two every year.
Wow.
So anyway, so Woody gladly steps outside, which is outside the press box there with this guy. And I follow him, and I stop at the door because I'm not going to try to get between them. I want to hear it. So I'm listening outside the door, and the guy got on to Woody, called him a couple of we used the initials. I don't want to do that, but
yeah,
Woody lit into him. And I mean, and like I said, I'm standing behind a steel door, and I can hear just Woody going off.
Yes.
So they come back in. Woody comes back in. I don't even remember if the kid came back in.
At this point, Kyle Busch is still going.
Kyle Busch is still talking.
Still
yeah,
talking.
Yeah. It's like one-on-ones now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but he had this guy had not asked Kyle, you know, you think I ought to take up for you? He was going to go take Woody outside, take him to the woodshed, then come back and tell Kyle, say, hey, look, that guy that said that to you, even though Kyle knew who it was,
yeah,
he just said, I got on to him pretty good. I doubt that he did that after that.
Oh, it was great. And so it just spiraled. I mean, it truly, in a second, spiraled out of control, because when he shushed Mike Curb up and then Kyle stood up and started talking, and then it was screaming. And
oh, yeah.
Poor
yeah.
Tammy's trying to control things. We're all, I mean, I'm asking questions. We're all, I mean, it just, when ESPN calls and says, hey, we want this video, because the guitar thing became a huge story.
Yeah.
He smashed the guitar.
Oh, it was a national story.
Yeah.
And to this day, it remains a national story. And he's been a good sport about it, because he won another Xfinity race at the fairgrounds 2 years ago. And as soon as it was over, he pulls into victory lane. They hand him a guitar, and he takes it up and puts it over his head like he's going to smash it, and then smiles and brings it back down.
Oh, yeah.
So he's still, you know, everybody, it's still a story.
Yeah.
And Kyle's, you know, he's at the end of his career. I don't know how much longer he's going to race, but that will go down. He's won a lot of races. He hadn't won any lately. But that'll go down part of his legacy.
Always. I'll never forget that moment. All right, more with Mike Organ and for Chase McCabe. Story time here today till 11 o'clock, right here on 102.5 Live from the Omni Nashville Hotel. This is the Chase and Big Joe Show.